As the Republican platform says, the welfare of the farmer is vital to that of the whole country. The prosperity of the country rests usually upon the prosperity of agriculture.
That was William Howard Taft from a speech recorded in 1908. It's a bit difficult to hear, but in this speech he says, "The welfare of the farmer is vital to that of the whole country. The prosperity of the country rests upon the prosperity of agriculture." Indeed, that was true in 1908, and it's still true today. Welcome to Dialed Up, a podcast where we take the biggest problems facing agriculture, dial the volume up, and explore what's being done to fix them. I'm your host, Eleni Paulson. The problem? Sustainable farming needs more support. We just heard from William H. Taft in 1908. And one of my favorite recent quotes is one from Beth Ford, CEO of Land O'Lakes, when she says,
"One of the foundations for the security of the United States is a safe, affordable food supply, driven by the most productive farmers in the world, the American farmer."
So you see, the sentiment was true in 1908, and it's true now. If the government is involved heavily in agriculture, if they're invested in the outcome of agriculture, and if we're increasing our collective national focus on climate change, on sustainability, and on taking care of the earth, well, it only makes sense that the government should be involved in those efforts too, right? Right, to some extent. The government is, in fact, quite invested in farming. There's a system of subsidies for farmers in the U.S., including subsidies for inputs like fertilizer, agriculture infrastructure, research, and, of course, risk protection and loss subsidies. I spoke with Dr. Michael Boland, an agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota, and gleaned some insights about the role of government in supporting crop insurance. Now, it's important to note that everyone has a different opinion on if, or how, the government should be involved in farm support. From regulation to financial support, there's a balance of freedom and fail-safes that divide us in all areas of this country, not just farming. But it's been interesting to hear perspectives from farmers and economists through my research for this podcast. Now here's Dr. Boland.
The food industry is really the world's biggest quasi-public-private utility. Every country in the world has got the public sector, the government is involved in some way, shape, or form in their food industry. So it's really operating as a quasi-public utility.
Dr. Boland is right. Agriculture is one of the biggest public-private industries on Earth. So right off the bat, it's difficult to isolate one aspect of government involvement from the rest of the agriculture ecosystem, which includes farmers, processors, companies like Land O'Lakes, and consumers. But we're going to try. And we'll exhibit some of these ideas with the largest farm subsidy program controlled by government today, the Federal Crop Insurance Program. It's run by the USDA's Risk Management Agency. Today, we're going to explore crop insurance and how it supports, or could support, sustainable farming initiatives. While this is not the only way that farmers can receive government support for sustainable practices, diving into this specific program is a great way to see the nuances of this system across the board. So, let's talk crop insurance. Sustainably farmed food products are gaining popularity among American consumers and increased resources in agriculture legislation, like the Farm Bill. However, the government could be doing more to support sustainable farming initiatives in the U.S., reward sustainable farming practices through government-subsidized programming, and reduce the stigma that sustainable farming is riskier than conventional farming. The government can do this through the Federal Crop Insurance Program. The Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, the FCIC, is a government corporation managed by the Risk Management Agency of the USDA. This corporation partners with private crop insurance providers to subsidize their insurance. Federal crop insurance is governed by the Farm Bill, an agriculture, nutrition, and forestry bill that is amended and signed into legislation every 5 years. As of 2018, the Farm Bill included funding for federal crop insurance and regulations in the following areas: funding agricultural operations, managing risk on an operation, implementing conservation practices, and recovering from natural disasters. In short, federal crop insurance acts as a safety net to ensure farmers' crops are protected, despite market volatility. The Farm Bill has supported sustainability practices since 1985 and continues to reform its farm operations and resources. However, some key issues still prevent farmers from adapting sustainable farming practices. I was recently able to attend a webinar on just this topic. The webinar was called Climate Disruption, Agriculture, and Crop Insurance. What are the connections? It was hosted by the National Center for Appropriate Technologies, ATRA. ATRA is a sustainable agriculture information service that runs through a cooperative agreement with the USDA's Rural Business Cooperative Service. The presenter was Jeff Szyzinski. He's a natural resource economist and agricultural economist whose work includes publications and education on crop insurance, specifically with conservation in mind. You'll hear more of Jeff's research and thoughts on how we can improve crop insurance in a later episode. However, for now, I think it's important that we have some grounding on what crop insurance is at a high level, how it supports sustainable agriculture, and how it hinders sustainable agriculture, and some of the big barriers that farmers are facing as they try to adopt conservation practices. Let's dive in.
Now, here's something that is going to be one of these wonkish, in the weeds kind of things that people always tell me I get into too quickly, but I think it's a very critical issue when it comes to climate disruption and its relationship to crop insurance. This is a definition of good farming. It's the RMA, or the USDA's definition of what a good farming practice is in relationship to crop insurance, mind you. I'm not saying this generally. This is the, I call it the RMA fine print. And I'm going to read a little bit of this, but you can read it along and pay attention to the red part. Good farming practices. First of all, they're not mentioning specific things here, but the production methods utilized to produce the insured crop and, quote, and this is the important, allow it to make normal progress towards maturity and produce at least the yield used to determine the production guarantee or amount of insurance. And again, there's all these other things about, the experts that you can check with and call your insurance provider or the company that provides the insurance to make sure and, determine this for sure. But if you think about it, what's important about it is that red part, normal progress towards maturity. And the reason that is that way is that because premiums are, for all of the products, revenue, well, with exceptional farm, are kind of based on a yield, on yields, on your historic yields. They're called your actual production history. And of course, setting those premiums is, you always have to look backwards to get a sense for where they should be set so that you make that, that actuarial soundness where you pay out more than one overall anyway. And so, they want to know that if you change the way you farm and you're going to disrupt your historical revenue history, by maybe trying something for a few years and lowering your productivity based historically on your yield, well, that could start to, they'd say, oh, why are you doing something funny and weird? If you do something funny and weird, then all our models get thrown out of kilter and, we don't know if those are legitimate things you should be doing and blah, blah, blah. And it goes on like that. And it's been a huge issue of late with cover cropping. I'll get to that. And it also is a huge issue when it comes to conservation and therefore, ultimately, I think some issues around climate disruption. Now, this was supposedly changed in the 2018 Farm Bill. And I argue that this issue has not been settled unless at some point RMA changes some of these definitions. But the use of NRC conservations, if you read the first half before you get to the red, that's kind of what people think. Oh, that's okay. Therefore, use of NRC's conservation will not have any impact on federal crop insurance. If you stop right there, that might be clear. But notice that they keep going on, provided, you got to watch those provisions, that provided, the fine print, the adoption of such practice does not, again, negatively impact the insured's crop ability to make normal progress. So, according to RMA, is cover cropping a good farming practice? I can't see how many times I see every day cover crops is, going to build a resilient system and it's going to, save us from climate and all of that. But then we've got this problem that, well, if you take cover crop, your yield might drop. You might be doing something that doesn't make you have normal progress towards the historical yields that determined your revenue guarantee. So is it or isn't it? For the most part, they kind of come over, but then they still have all these guidances. You got to go check the experts. I mean, how many farmers want to, you know, if they're going to try cover crops, they want to walk, they want to talk to their agent, or they have to go through an extra bureaucratic thing, or they got to crack somebody at a land grant university and say, is it okay if I try cover crops? And well, when do you terminate? Well, we have guidance, but you know, but then the farmer says, but I don't want to do it when you tell me to do it. I think I need to do it when I need to do it, otherwise it's not going to work. Anyway, that's just cover cropping. In Montana, I hate to say this, and I'm probably get in some trouble, but organic farmers, grain farmers, big farms in Montana are starting, and others, even other in the regenerative movement, are trying this interseeding, planting two crops at once. And that really messes up RMA. They just don't know if that's a good farming practice. And to my understanding, unless you, again, you get blessed in special dispensation, you could jeopardize part or all of your crop insurance by, if they discover it, you're interseeding in terms of a practice. And then the question is organic farming a good farming practice? Because that involves a lot of strange things that might interrupt. I mean, eventually you'll be an organic farmer and you'll develop a yield, and that will be reflective of your organic practices. But when you make that first movement, it's pretty big disruption of your normal yields. And in general, is it any sustaining farming practice or anything innovative? Is that good or bad? And here's some even definitions of the RMA, organic farming practice. It's very specific to the organic rule. And then sustainable, which is distinctive from organic because they say, well, everything excluding organic is sustainable. But again, it's necessarily to check with those agricultural experts. By the way, at our program and therefore NCAT, we are labeled and in the law and in part of the in the documents, we are listed as an organic farming practice expert. So if you have some questions about your good organic farming practices and crop insurance, feel free to call me. I love to talk about crop insurance, as you can tell. So given this system of crop insurance, how can one meet the climate disruption challenge? Is the ability of farmers and ranchers to adapt to climate-friendly practices or systems of production primarily constrained by economic factors, including federal crop insurance subsidies and the financial risks of implementing different crops and practices and systems of production? And I take this from a great dissertation of a guy in Iowa. I think Iowa State 2017 is a reference. I draw heavily on this part from that work. It's great work. And I did look at there's a lot of research. Well, not a lot, but there's some. Most research on Midwest, first of all, when you ask this question, most of it is on commodity crops to begin with. We don't even talk about the apples and specialty crops in terms of that issue. Well, we might not be talking about it because, again, they don't get very good insurance, therefore nothing to investigate in terms of the influence of insurance over cropping crop choices. Crop-specific subsidies significantly affect crop diversification, and I would say insurance too. Farmers respond to the incentive of lowering growing costs by replacing or lowering risks by replacing existing crops with the subsidized crops. Hence, corn and soybeans, mono and biculture, very much reinforced by our current structure of crop insurance. By specializing, farms may be able to capture product-specific economies, but they may reduce their ability to manage risk or capture economies of scope. I'm not going to get into the economic difference of scale, of economies of size and scope, but there is a distinction, an important one. Scope has to do more to do with diversifying your risk across the enterprise, and economies of scale, as it implies, has to do with that your costs are distributed over a higher volume. And we have captured in a lot of our commodity crops, most of the economies of size, and this may be reinforced by crop insurance. Crop insurance likely changes land use, more marginal land. This is a debated issue and a lot of some differing things on that, but it's definitely worth more research. And again, that could have climate implications. We could be breaking out more land, releasing the carbon sequestrated in the soil if crop incentives are going the wrong way. And this is just a very specific thing of this guy's research. My results also confirm federally subsidized crop insurance as the primary source of a farmer's coping capacity. Whew. Now, if that's true, and the incentives are to grow more monocultures, and the only way I can cope is my revenue insurance, am I getting trapped and not being able to challenge and adapt to the future of climate disruption?
I also spoke with Jolene Hadrich, agribusiness expert with the University of Minnesota, about some of the pitfalls with crop insurance. We talked about a few different nuances, some of which we explored in an earlier episode, and many of which I'll explore more fully in a later episode in this series. But here's an important point she made, which you'll want to keep in mind as we dive into the nuances of crop insurance.
Think about crop insurance as if you own a house or you're renting, you have renters insurance or homeowners insurance. So there's general farm insurance that farmers pay that cover, like, if you have a fire on your farm or your livestock get out and they like run into a car on the road. That covers that. But that general farm insurance policy does not cover any damage to your growing crops in the field. So that is what crop insurance is covering, is that growing crop in the field. And there are different coverage levels. So that crop insurance doesn't cover 100% of the crop. That coverage level ranges anywhere from 55% up to some policies are 75%, some policies are 95%. But that subsidy rate is not the same across all of those coverage levels. It decreases as you get more coverage. And that coverage level is based on your yield. So again, if you're in like a low yield producing area, that coverage level is very different than if you're at a high level. And crop insurance is something that is priced based on your region, based on the yield. So that's an example of something that really catered to the unique characteristics of different production areas. And another caveat is you need to have, you know, 10 years of data in order to get coverage on a specific crop. And if you don't have that, then you have to use the county average, which may or may not represent what your farm produces. So there's just a lot of caveats with crop insurance. It's not just like, oh, let's take this pot. We're not Flo, you know, from Progressive. We just take the box off the shelf and go with it. So yeah, there are so many unique things regarding crop insurance and subsidies and how that could potentially factor into sustainability goals, greenhouse gas emissions, all of that.
As you've heard, government support for sustainable farming is necessary, but it's nuanced and difficult to plan, finance, and implement. But there are some ways we can better support the system and help producers gain access to resources and education. We'll dive into that next time on Dialed Up. Thanks for listening.